be pragmatic, focus, and then double down on what works. Once you find what works, just double down.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. Happy New Year. It is great to have you here for 2025. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to this one of our inspiring guests. It is so cool to be back with a new year. We are going to be kicking off the year with a focus on what it takes to make an e-commerce business successful. Yes, we will be doing our annual January Success Top Tips episode in a few episodes' time, but we're kicking off with this one where we are diving into different ways of growing your business, I suppose. I'm catching up with someone who I first met on a panel at an event last year in London, who runs a beauty business in the UK, which he was bought in to turn around. They grew too fast and it all went a little bit wrong. And then he was bought in to turn it back to success. And he's going to be sharing what it took to do that. He's also going to be sharing kind of like a warning, an early warning system of the things that might go wrong if you don't bear them in mind when you plot those growth processes. I'm going to leave that one a little bit hanging there so you can find out what that is a little later on when you actually listen to the whole episode. But three key things to watch out for, three big trade-offs when you choose to go for growth. No reason why you shouldn't take these trade-offs, but you really do need to consider their implications before you do them. Okay, I think I've teased you enough now. Coming up very shortly is our guest for this episode. Please make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss out on his top tips and my own take on this episode. And now to introduce our special guest. Diego Mandelbaum is the CEO at KF Beauty, a privately owned beauty company based in the UK, who own one of the most recognisable makeup brands launched in the last few years, Wunderbrow.com. Founded in 2015, they now sell globally via their Shopify store and Amazon and a few small select wholesale partners. And all in all, they do 15,000 orders a month. Hello, Diego.
Hello, Chloe. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on the show. How did you end up in this lovely world of e-commerce?
Well, I didn't find beauty. Beauty found me. Started my career in food and then went to agencies and media. And I was hired by a privately run company, beauty company, international company called Coty, C-O-T-Y, and spent the next 16 years with them in different postings around the world. So I had a stint in a few years in Paris, which is, you know, one of the capitals of the beauty category. So that was fun. New York, Australia, and LA, Los Angeles, where Coty at that point in time did an acquisition of a nail polish brand called OPI, which some of your listeners may be familiar with. And so very fruitful 16 years in the beauty industry, and again, in a company that started off private and then became public and then became an acquirer of smaller beauty companies. So really a growth story inside a huge company that, you know, nowadays is part of the, you know, FTSE 500 or Fortune 500. So a proper scaling up, I guess. And as far as e-commerce, you know, in those years, I guess, you know, I'm showing my age, you know, I saw it all come about. And, you know, I was working for Adidas for a while, and, you know, they had a very strong media team. And that's when it all started to go a bit e-commerce, and I started to, you know, grasp it. But it really, really came to a head, of all people, with the launch of the Lady Gaga fragrance. When I was in Australia, I was the CMO of Coty in Australia. And she literally did, until then, I don't know, none of us had witnessed something like it, but she really got her community online with a website, The Little Monsters, I think they were, the Gaga Monsters. And that was literally full on, I'm talking 20, maybe 13, 14. So that was full on e-commerce. And that was my first, you know, baptism of fire with Lady Gaga's perfume, I guess.
Why not start big? I mean, I often think that beauty is one of the hardest categories to sell online. Because, you know, historically, the industry has been so much about that kind of concession in-store experience and, you know, the beautiful women who are selling you the products and the amazing, you know, point of sale materials and all the rest of it that goes into that, you know, beautiful bags, very much a physical experiential thing. And then you've got the fundamental fact that you want to know how the perfume smells. You can't do that online. You want to know if the color suits you or how it works, what it feels like. It still continues to really quite impress me what the beauty industry has managed to create online. Have you seen that in your experience going from kind of beauty marketing proper into now this e-commerce world?
Definitely. So I think the flip side of that, Chloe, it is very experiential in the sense that it, to this day, you go to a department store and people spritz you with a cologne or a duty free is another one where, you know, that is a world of itself. So in every airport of the world, I think the flip side of that is it's very much aspirational. So I think, you know, that's where beauty is, no pun intended, beautiful in the sense that there is that aspiration to belong. In this case, it was, you know, to the little monsters of Lady Gaga. So I'm not saying it didn't matter what the perfume smelled like, but it was part of being part of that community. The fashion, luxury fashion world does that a lot. So at some point in time, you know, I used to also be involved in selling, I think it was the Gucci fragrance or the Chloe fragrance. All these fashion houses sell, you know, a frock for 10,000 euros, but at the same time, you can get the fragrance for 200. So there is that aspirational aspect of beauty. And so these brands and the way you build brands in the beauty industry is actually quite fascinating. You know, it's very sensorial, even in the advertising of fragrances. Is, you know, Lady Gaga was probably half naked or whatever it was. You know what I mean? There's all that showing codes and showing skin and the rest of it. So no, it was harder in a way because you were competing. And at the point, e-commerce was tiny, no? I'm talking, again, more than 10 years ago. But nowadays, I think people are used to it. And especially after COVID and the pandemic, you know, buying a perfume online, possibly a risk, but a risk, you know, many people are willing to take. So, yeah.
So let's go back to your story. You were doing all these amazing things with Coty all around the world with massive, massive brands. And then you came to work at Wonderbrow, which is a snappy, cool startup. How come you made that move?
Yes, I think there's half of it is, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. So, you know, for good or for bad, you know, I was hungry to make an impact and a larger impact. And I think, you know, being a big fish in a smaller pond or whatever the metaphor, it works out nicely as far as impact. So when I landed the CEO job in KF Beauty and, you know, we did the whole due diligence on Wonderbrow, I knew I was going to possibly have a large impact on the brand and on the company. And to be honest, that's really exciting. It doesn't mean that being part of a huge company is not exciting, but I think at this stage in my career, having also witnessed a startup that became huge, which was OPI, the nail polish company. And then I was part of a scale up in America when I was in LA. And, you know, that was very interesting too, because we were building brands in a company called Pacific World, which was in California, in Irvine. So I took this step rationally and considered and with, you know, with ambition. So it was in many ways for me, at least, a logical next step in my career. And then I came into the Wonderbrow world.
And what's it been like? You know, what's the journey been like over the last few years, turning Wonderbrow into what it is today?
Yeah, so Wonderbrow has an interesting story because it's one of those brands that, you know, 2017 maybe, it went viral, and it went viral in Facebook and Instagram, and only, I think it was mainly Facebook at that point in time. And, you know, it had that moment of virality, which I would imagine, because I wasn't around, but I would imagine, you know, it was hands on deck and doubling down and doubling down and doubling down. But I think what happened, you know, if the story is written one day about Wonderbrow, is that they got ahead of themselves. So you know, that virality lasted what it lasted, but by the time it was over, there was three more brands. There was fixed costs, which, you know, were too high. There was, an ambition to do a product catalog of 200 products. So, you know, very, I think this is a huge warning to anybody who's, you know, I don't think hyper growth is a thing anymore, fortunately or unfortunately. But I think if anybody's up to hyper growth, I would suggest be very clear how you're going to land it. Because I think, you know, in those years, I guess 15, 16, 17, 18, those years were hyper growth. But with, I guess, not much of how the thing was going to land, the brand. So, long story short, when I came in 2021, it was sort of a transition or transformation story. It was like, can you transform this brand that was viral, that went into, you know, another three brands and into the, you know, face foundation category and the lipstick category? Can you transform it back to its success? And for me, it was yes. And to be honest, the vision for me as the CEO was quite clear. It was, and I don't want to be too simplistic, but, you know, product catalog, let's do the 80-20 rule. You know, there's 20 SKUs that sell 80% of the revenue. Just, you know, chuck everything else. And of course, that's easy to say, very hard to do. And it takes a while. And, you know, you're losing revenue. You're not making revenue if you're chucking things out. And by the way, chucking things out, I don't mean chucking them. This is slowly but surely migrating non-selling SKUs for selling it. But it was cutting the fat, I guess, of the product catalog. And then I think, you know, the other part of my vision, at least, was we're going to be really, really, really good at one segment, which in the beauty category is, you know, tempting not to be in a way. You know, everybody wants their lipstick and their foundation and their, you know, nail polish. We're like, we're just going to do brows, and we're going to be the best one in brows. We're going to be number one in brows, and we're going to sort out brows. And 2-3 years later, we're there. You know, all our innovation, all our new products are on brows. The brand is back. We've launched a campaign in 2024, and, you know, it's all worked out as far as, you know, ticking all the boxes, bringing it back, and it's been a happy transition. And the transformation of the brand in a way has been easy, in the sense that the virality was already there. There was some sort of awareness when you cross people, you cross customers or consumers, they were like, oh, I think I've heard of it. And, you know, so that was thankfully something we could build upon.
I always think when there's those big change periods, especially when, you know, you're both talking about cutting down the SKU count and discontinuing stuff and evolving the products at the same time. So you're kind of trying to do two completely opposite things at the same time. It can be really hard to keep the team there with you. How did you manage to get the team focused on what probably felt like initially a much smaller thing than the big thing they'd created?
Correct. I think that's a really good point, Chloe, in the sense of there's two things there. One is the actual team. So thankfully, you know, I could build my team, and obviously there was a few legacy employees that were excited to come in with the change and the transition. So the team really bonded well on the vision, as in we're going to be the number one in brows and let's go for it. So, you know, I think the keep it simple, and in many ways is a luxury, the fact that by the constraints, it's like we're in brows, that's where we play. And, you know, everybody gets excited about what the competition is doing. And so they come to me almost on a weekly basis going, can we launch this? And I go, no, because it's not in brows. So we can't. So there's that on the team. Now, to address your first point, and I don't know if this is not a great metaphor, but it is the bath water in the bathtub, in the sense, as far as the product catalog, in the sense you're pulling the plug. All these products are being discontinued. You're seeing the bath water come down, and you're opening up every single tap to get water back into the bathtub. So apologies for that crappy metaphor, but you're trying to get all this NPD, you know, sorted out and inside the brow segment and launched. So it's a delicate balance about how much, you know, waters or products are being discontinued and how many more you're adding. And let me clarify, we're a very small company or a small medium company and a mid-market company, as they call it. And from that point of view, you know, we're really careful about cash. So if we say we're going to launch 5 to 10 products every year, each one of those babies need to be fed, need the cash. So the last thing we want to do is put that in cash in boxes and see them in the warehouse gathering dust. So there's also a risk of the NPD working or not working. So long story short, it's a delicate balance, as you just mentioned, between, you know, getting stuff sorted out and the new stuff actually working and making an impact and being successful launches, which thankfully they've been.
Given you've just been through this phenomenal kind of recreation, reinvention of the business and the brand, is it, 'cause I want to move on to another topic in a moment, listeners, but is there one piece of advice for someone who's sitting there going, God, last year was awful. What are we going to do? How are we going to save this? Is there one piece of advice you'd give to them, a CEO who's in that position you were in when you first came to KF Beauty?
I think, you know, Chloe, this is my personality, but I also think it's a trait if you're going to embark on something like this. And it's one word, it's pragmatic. And I think if you keep it simple, you know, I've just given you really simple things like, you know, the 80-20 rule, you know, probably invented, I don't know, 500 years ago.
I think it was a bit more than 500.
So it's been around. But being really pragmatic, you know, I still to this day flog the 4 P's. And you know, some people in my team look at me and go, what's the 4 P's? And I'm like, well, it's product, it's price, it's promotions, it's distribution, placement. So it serves, I guess what I'm trying to say, be pragmatic, focus, try to keep the focus on. Because even me as a CEO, sometimes I get tempted to, you know, they go like, hey, maybe we could be in this retailer, maybe if we launch a lip gloss, that could be brilliant, you know. And I'm like, yeah, maybe, but I need to keep myself in check too. So I think focus. And then Chloe, I think the last thing when you're into a transformation or transition, which by the way, this is my third one. So I did one with OPI, I did one with Pacific World, is double down on what works. Once you find what works, just double down, double down. And I think, again, easier said than done, but you know, even on Amazon, which for us is a huge account, as soon as we see something working, it's like, double it down. No, but we're going to go over budget. Don't care. Well, I hope my investors are not listening. But we're going to double down. Because I think when you find something that works, it's just, you know, ride that wave.
There you go, everybody. Be pragmatic, focus, and double down on what works. It's a lot simpler than you think. Simplicity is the key. Okay, Diego, I said I wanted to twist our topic a little bit because you've got a great quote right there on your LinkedIn profile. I think it's in your email footer as well, which is where I first found it, which is about simplicity and obvious stuff, as things as obvious as the 80-20 rule, but which I think it's worth shouting out about, which is that essentially this comes from a quote from a chap, a professor, in fact, called Aswath Damodaran, which I probably said horribly. Sorry, Aswath, Professor Aswath, which is all about growth actually coming at a cost, a bit like the Wonderbrow team saw, but that if we open our eyes, it's a cost we can manage. So I thought this would be quite a cool thing for us to talk about, given the climate we're currently in the e-commerce space. So Diego, tell us a bit about this kind of growth reality check we ought to be taking ourselves on.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been following him for a bit, and for whoever, if your listeners don't know who he is, he's an NYU professor and he has a newsletter for free. And, you know, as far as corporate finance and stuff like that, you can really tap into his literature and get a lot out of it. But what really spiked my curiosity when I read him was, you know, these trade-offs that happen. And I think I'm going to ground what he says in what I feel, which is at the end of the day, I'm here to grow the business, but I'm also here to make a profit. And more than anything, which I said earlier, I'm here to manage the cash. So all fine and good doing the growth, but it comes with different trade-offs. So I think he mentions about three, and one is the risk of, you know, for example, geographic expansion or distribution. You know, again, I've met a few founders. They go, wow, I got a purchase order from so-and-so retailer. This is brilliant. I'm in. I've made it. And I go, wait a minute. All that working capital will go into boxes, which will go into the retailer, which may or may not work. And you've just hedged your whole company based on one purchase order. And I've seen, I promise you, I've seen that happen. And I've seen that hit the wall. And it's not a nice picture. So there's a risk there of being tempted for the expansion, and sometimes it's the expansion at all costs. And again, I think it takes us to what we were saying about a few minutes earlier. You know, how do you land these things? So, you know, there's operating risk, there's expansion risk. So he tackles that, and I agree with that. I think, you know, measured expansion is, I think, the key word. Pragmatic expansion is the key word. So there's a bit of that. Then he also talks about reinvesting. And I think some people don't realize this, but you know, growth is all pretty, but you need money and you need to reinvest the money. And so that goes, you know, some people want profit. Investors would love more profit. I would love more money to reinvest. So we have to meet somewhere in the middle, because I'm not going to grow if I don't reinvest. And I know that sounds, you know, intuitive, but there's a lot of pressures from people who invested in this company to go, show me profit, show me a lot of profit. And I go, sure, I'll show you a little profit, but I'll show you where all the rest of the money goes. And all the rest of the money goes into reinvestment and, you know, buying product, advertising on Google, doing all, you know, Amazon. So it goes to all the right places. And I think the last but not least, which he mentions, and I think, Chloe, we talked about it in our panel a while ago, is pricing. You know, you end up entering the fray and all the pressures of the marketplace are to lower your price, all the pressures, or to promote more than you should. And that's usually eating up margins. So depending on what stage of the transition transformation you're in, that is also a trade-off. And one thing that I have done in the last 3 years in Wonderbrow is not touch the pricing, because I don't think we're at that stage where we want to, you know, fuel growth by, you know, lowering the prices of our hero products. So, yeah.
I love that way of thinking about it, because I think it's a way, these three elements are a way in which many businesses catch a cold and then look back and go, oh, that's kind of obvious. You know, we hung out in the waiting room with all the people who've already had the cold and we ended up the cold. What a surprise. And it, especially those second two, the reinvestment and the margins piece, makes me think of, you know, a lot of the time when you hear people talking about selling on Amazon in particular, they'll talk about, you want to get the flywheel moving, you want to get the flywheel moving. But of course, the problem is once the flywheel's going, you've got to keep the Amazon warehouse stocked. Otherwise, the flywheel grinds to a horrible, horrible halt and may never go again. But Amazon probably hasn't paid you yet or isn't paying you as fast as you need to buy new stock. And all of a sudden, you end up in a funding loop of having to pay commission to the financiers in order to get the cash to buy the stock to keep the flywheel going, because all you're obsessed with is the flywheel, not about profitable growth and the actual success of your company. If you guys could see how grinning and nodding Diego is right now. But it's like by you explaining these, we are forewarned about it, and therefore hopefully we can manage to avoid these crises in 2025.
Amazon is a great example, because, you know, we have the luxury that we've already clocked up, I don't know, more than 50,000, you know, 4 or 5 star reviews on Amazon. So we're an established product in there. And, you know, it is, you know, many years later, it is the gift that keeps on giving on one hand. But it doesn't stop us from flywheeling the flywheel or whatever that verb is. You know, we're still feeding the monster in the sense of, you know, having to keep things on track and getting the next review. And especially when we're, you know, putting new products in the platform, we realize how, you know, how hard it is to establish them, or how much it costs to establish. And we have the luxury that we already have established Wonderbrow, the original brow gel, in there with the 50,000 reviews. But the new guys have to come in there and, you know, do the hard work and the hard lift. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's again, it has to be a pragmatic, you know, it's very easy for me to go, We're the number one brow in the brows segment. So we're going to launch 10 launches a year, and we're going to feed the market with 10 launches a year. And then anyway, how are we going to pay for all that? On Amazon. So then I go, well, maybe not 10 launches. Maybe we'll do 7 or we'll do 5, because that's the constraint. And you know, even though everybody would like to do 10, we end up doing 7. And, you know, at least we know we have a fighting chance. And thankfully, so far, they've succeeded. So it works out that way.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our business to the next level. Not that you haven't already given us that in bucket loads, Diego, but are you ready for the top tips?
Let's do it.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So I'm going to recommend a book by another NYU professor called Scott Galloway. And he, if you read his bio, he started in e-commerce, and he's now he's made a fortune. But he was one of the first ones in the 90s, I think, to start a proper e-commerce company called Red Envelope or something like that, gifting online. Anyway, long story short, many, many years later, he's just launched a book called The Algebra of Wealth. And I think this is a really neat and tidy book, in the sense that, I mean, it's very pragmatic, in the sense of, you know, follow your talent and not your passion would be one chapter in there. You know, diversify your investments would be another chapter in there. So it's very, not self-help, but it's very helpful. It really cuts it, especially if you're a younger listener and you really want to make some wealth during your lifetime. This is a really good one-stop shop book to go from A to Z, and you know, everything that has to do with wealth and making money and how you make money, but in a very, again, pragmatic way.
Oh, nice. I'll have to check that one out. Thank you. The traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I'm old school, so I'm going to go email all the way. I think, you know, we love acquiring new customers, and then we love email them, and then we love it when they come back on email because we send them a mailer, and we love sending promotions on email. So again, we do, I would say most of our advertising is on Google because a lot of people search for brow products. That works out that way. We do the Facebooks and the Instagrams and the TikToks and the YouTubes. But I think at the end of the day, the one that is really fulfilling is once you've, you know, captured an email, you have them on the email list, and that is the gift that keeps on giving too.
Great ROI on email. Good for the cash flow. Yeah, very much.
You're hired,
so.
Chloe. You're hired.
Is that all it takes?
That's all it takes. You're hired.
Okay, the tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
So now I'm going to show my age the other way around. I've just discovered a little late, but Canva. And being a PowerPoint guy for the better part of 30 years, I'm enamored with Canva. So, you know what? Send a link. Everybody looks at the presentation. You can tweak it. Hey, it's a whole new world for me, but it works. And yeah.
I said Canva for presentations rather than Canva for marketing graphics.
Yes. You just send them a link. Hey, look at me teaching you about Canva.
Yeah, I'm a Google Docs lady, so maybe I need to diversify.
You asked for a tool, cool tool. That's my cool tool of the week. I may move on next week.
Excellent. And finally, Diego, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
You know what? At this point in time, I am really focused on the logistics side of it, because I think that's where, you know, at the end of the day, we're a small, medium company. We can do our best. I'll tell you where we try to do our best. It's like, you know, less carton in the carton boxes on packaging. You know, that's where we can make an impact, as far as, you know, I remember the good old days where perfumes used to come in a, you know, I don't know, 1x1 box just to show size and pressure on the shelf. So the packaging has really got smaller, and that's better and more sustainable. So that's great. And I think that's where we can make an impact. But I think in the bigger sense of the picture, it's the logistics. And there, to be fair, we use a lot of Amazon for our logistics because we're almost, you know, piggybacking on them and their good job that they do on logistics. So I think that's part of making the efficiency of the footprint and, you know, minimizing moving boxes around the world and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the logistics and the packaging is such a fairly straightforward win for most businesses. So I really like that. Diego, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and your business on the web and social?
Sure. So they can find us at WonderBrow, and that's Wonder with a U. So wunderbrow.co.uk or .com, and that's where they can find us.
Brilliant. I believe you've got a discount code for the audience if they want to go and try out your goods.
I do. So we have a surprise discount code at checkout by using the word masterplan. You'll get a nice, generous discount at the end of it, and hopefully you like the product.
Nice bit of intrigue there, little marketing tactic like that. Thank you, Diego. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been brilliant catching up with you again and being able to share some of your insights with the audience. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Chloe.
Huge thanks to Diego for helping me pack so much into this episode. So, couple of big things here that would be my two big old takeaways from this. One would be those tips that Diego gave us on how he essentially turned around WonderBrow, which was to be pragmatic, to get focused, and then to double down on what works. It's so simple, but when things go wrong, it's because people aren't doing these three things. So if you're in that space at the moment where you're going, oh my God, what are we going to do in 2015? Think about that. Be pragmatic, get focused, and double down on what works. And then the other part are those insights from the NYU professor Aswath Damodaran, who basically, it's all about reminding yourself that if you want to grow your business faster, it means you've got to accept three types of trade-off. Now, whether you're in the position where you're going, where you're realizing you've made these trade-offs and so you're going to have to pull things back, or whether you're in a position where I don't know, maybe the boss is pushing you to go for faster growth, you think you should be going for faster growth, consider these trade-offs and see how you can fix them or avoid them. The first one being the growth risk trade-off, which is about if you're expanding into riskier geographies, riskier markets, which then, as Diego was saying, screws up your cash flow, but could screw up other things, you know, to stretch your team too far, etc. Then the second one is about reinvestment. Of course, if you sell more goods, you've got to buy more goods. And have you got the cash flow to enable you to do that without it causing you problems? Or that's also when you have to spend more on advertising or marketing to make it happen. And then the third one being about the margins one, which I think we were all banging on about plenty in 2024, which is about lowering prices and you're offering bigger discounts in order to drive that growth. Not necessarily the right way to go. So lots for you to think about in today's episode. What a great way to kick off 2025. Now, you can get our notes on this episode together with all those top tips, the links to what we mentioned and all the rest of it by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short link. So just put ecmp.info/ the number of this episode, put that in the URL bar and you'll go straight to the right page of the website. And then don't forget when you're there to add yourself to our email list, you share all those many, many other things we share to help you plan out your business for the year, get your marketing working and everything else. If you liked this episode, then I've got a couple of things you may want to go and dive into. First off, ecmp.info/Shopify, where you can find our Shopify episodes. We've then also got ecmp.info/beauty, where you can find our beauty episodes. And then we've got ecmp.info/big, where you can find our bigger companies and their lessons. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. We are talking growth for the next four episodes, so do stick around to find out other advice on how you should be growing and being more successful in 2025. And don't forget that I bring you a new interview every week to inspire and help e-commerce business owners like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-Commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.